We're joined by our guest now. He's the author of More Guns, Less Crime, and more pertinent to his current writings, he has a new book out called Freedomnomics. Freedomnomics. I'll query him about that, too. But this is John Lott. We've had him before. Hey, John, how are you?
Great to be back on. Thanks.
Hey, John, I thought about you the other night with I heard about that guy throwing chairs at Cookie Thornton in Kirkwood, Missouri, and I thought, God, what a horrible plight at the end. And I said, I'm going to call John Lott. This seems like a perfect scenario that is explained by more guns and less crime. The odd part is, John, in Kirkwood that night, I guess there is supposed to be a cop assigned to the room. But I guess it's just sometimes something so horrific happens that you can't even fathom it happening. And before it can fully happen, you're shot, right? I guess that's what happened with Cookie Thornton the other night.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine the terror that people in that situation face. I've talked to a number of people who've had to experience that type of terror, and it's understandable why it gets the news coverage it does. But this horrible situation and a couple others that actually occurred within a day of that all illustrate the point that you're making about here we have these gun-free zones. In this case, we had a police officer that was allowed in there. He was the first person killed in the attack. And what happens when you have somebody in uniform there, these killers in these situations either try to kill that person first or wait till they leave the room and then engage in the attack. But Missouri allows citizens to carry permanent concealed handguns, but they're banned from doing it in certain places. And this in this room where this attack occurred was one of those. If you have even a couple percent of the adult population in an area that has a permit concealed handgun, if you have 100 people in a room, something apparently what they had in this situation, you know, you're going to have a very high probability that at least someone unknown to the attacker, is going to be able to defend themselves.
Yeah, I must admit, John, when I read More Guns, Less Crime, I had a real epiphany in my life, and I guess gun detractors would say that was sacrilegious for me to use the word epiphany, but I remember thinking, you're right, so much of this takes place on a subtextual level, where in his subconscious, the man going in there, the Cookie Thornton, knows what sort of air, you know, it's sort of like akin to tipping cars over in French suburbs as opposed to tipping pickup trucks over in Abilene, Texas. You just don't really go there because you know it's probably your last gesture, right? If you know you live in a place where somebody has a gun, it makes you really think about this shooting people over parking tickets, right?
Right. Well, I mean, these people, when they're trying to commit the crime, so often what their goal is to try to create as much carnage as they can to try to kill as many people. And the big thing that I found in my research that affects how much damage that they're able to do is the amount of time that elapses between when the attack starts and when someone's able to arrive on the scene with a gun in order to stop them. The longer the amount of time, the more harm that you're going to have done.
Mm-hmm.
And in these situations, you see time after time, you know, even in the Columbine shooting, those kids, those killers in that case, they were following the concealed handgun law in Colorado. And there are a number of other times where these people, I believe, take it into account whether or not somebody might be there in order to stop them. There was an attack a few years ago at a Jewish daycare facility in Los Angeles where the attacker had first of all stopped by a couple other Jewish centers before he came across the daycare center there because he decided not to do it because he had seen multiple guards at the other places. These people, you know, they want to take the easy way out. I was chief economist at the United States Sentencing Commission during the late 80s, and I must have read thousands of trial transcripts where you would have robbers and turn evidence against each other in trial. And the questions were always the same. You know, why did you go and pick this particular victim to go after? And time after time, these robbers would go and say, well, it looked like an easy mark. You know, we talked about going after the drug dealer down the street, or we talked about going after somebody else, but, you know, a cab driver, but maybe they have a gun, or maybe they have some other type of protection. And then they said, we saw some musician-type guy look like he was walking across a parking lot, and he looked like Easy Mark, right, or some woman who wasn't going to be able to defend herself. And these criminals, just as much as anybody else, try to take relatively easier ways of committing their crime. And these terrorists, I mean, you mentioned how many times these guys die. About 75% of the time that these multiple victim public shootings occur, the killers themselves die at the scene. And even the other 25%, when we've talked to these people after, most of them expected to die at the scene. They just, the reason why they didn't is they, in those cases, they often weren't able to actually make themselves go through with the suicide that they were planning. But the normal law enforcement, where we punish people after the fact, just usually isn't relevant in these cases because they don't expect to be around for that punishment. And the thing that stops them in their warped mind is the degree that we can try to take away this bizarre gain that they feel that they can get in going out with killing and taking as many other lives and harming people as they think they can.
So the fact that there would be a ceiling on the carnage almost prohibits them from doing as much as fear for their own person, if you say they're all going in. The fact they won't be able to rack up the stats.
Right. I mean, you see this so many times when you read the diaries and other things from these people. They want to try to get attention when they go out.
Yes.
And the goal that they think is going to get them attention is how many people that they're going to think that they can take with them when they go.
God, absolutely chilling. You know, John, after immersing yourself in all this data over the years, it must have really eaten into your belief that the human being in general has strayed that far from the Serengeti plane. It's kind of, has it grimed you out on your fellow humans, or what has it done?
I don't know. I mean, it's depressing, surely. It's not just the United States that has to deal with this. I mean, there's countries like Israel and other places that have had to deal with these types of horrible types of events.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just something unique to our condition. I mean, Europe faces these types of attacks more frequently than people realize.
Well, I like about your work, John, is the accuracy of it. You've literally taken the time to accumulate the stats, and you know, I thank you for that, because like I said, it changed my mind on a lot of these issues. Now let me ask you about Freedomnomics real quickly, as a beer chaser here. What tell me about your new book, or your recent book.
Well, it's basically taking the simple notion of what I think economics boils down to, is that something's more costly, you'll do less of it. If they're the flip side of that, the greater the incentives that you get, the more you'll do of something.
Mm-hmm.
And it really can explain a whole range of things, everything from the impact of campaign finance regulations in terms of entrenching incumbents, making it more difficult to defeat them. It can explain a lot of the major social policy changes that we saw during the 1970s, like increases in out-of-wedlock births or drop in the rate at which children are put up for adoption. It can explain simple things like the crime discussions that we're just having. If you make something more costly, more difficult for a criminal, they'll do less of it. And just trying to take that simple idea and show how in policy debates and anything from the price of wine in restaurants or differences in the prices of gasoline that you see at gasoline stations can be explained by just that really simple idea. How much of the policy debate, where everybody from pharmaceutical companies are attacked by, you know, for greed and things like that, actually are very misleading, and that those types of misunderstandings in the market actually mean that more people will die in the future. Just, you know, for example, something simple as talking about imposing price controls, why that means that there are going to be fewer drugs available 5, 10, 15 years from now, and why people who otherwise would have been able to live are not going to get the type of medical care and attention that they otherwise would have received.
Unintended consequences, ethanol, raise the cost of corn, feed. There, you know, there's always the ripple effect. And let me ask you, is the title Freedomnomics a pragmatic and indeed deliberate parry to the thrust of Freakonomics?
Right. Well, there's obviously something there. I think that that book had a much more negative view of the world, in the sense that we talk about everybody from real estate agents to doctors taking advantage of patients to corporate crime being rampant. And I think there are lots that you can go and say, sure, there's an incentive to go and take advantage of customers that you have there to try to make more money. But customers know that, And markets come up with ways to try to solve those problems. So people have reputations, for example. If a realtor sells your house for less than it's worth, then the person who buys it unlikely to go back to that realtor because, you know, he wants to be able to sell it for as much as he thinks he can get it later on.
Right.
And so I think it was a bit of a simplistic view that I think misleads people about the way the market works in many different ways.
But many factors.
All part of the books on that.
Many factors go into all these things, and nobody delineates those factors more than John Lott. I'm telling you, you need to read this book, More Guns, Less Crime. I'm going to go on and read Freedonomics because that sounds interesting to me. But the man deals in accuracy, which is the emotion is bled out to a large degree because I like somewhere along the line just to be able to get the stats so I, as an adult person, can make a decision. John Lott is a purveyor of such. Thank you, John, for your time. That's More Guns, Less Crime and Freedonomics. This is the Dennis Miller Show.